This is an intro. Intro, intro, intro.
Hustle and Flowchart with your boy,
my boy,
Matt Wolf
and Joe Fit.
Hey, let's do this.
All right, red light's on. We got to be professionals now.
When has that ever happened?
Never. That's why people love us.
Oh, man.
I think.
I don't know if people love us.
It's one of them delirious days, end of the day.
My kids love me, at least.
I think that's true.
I don't know.
You don't want to hear what they told me.
Yeah.
About you.
All right. What are we doing? What are we doing here, Joe?
It's cool, man.
What are we doing?
Family loves you. All right. So, but we got to speed this up because I actually got to get back to my family now.
Yeah.
All right. So today we had a cool chat with Eric Berman. And Eric is, this is official, you know, comma Berman.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. Eric Berman. So this guy, he runs a great agency in San Diego. So he's another San Diego boy for the last 30 years. He runs a just a really cool dynamic agency called Branditize.
Mm-hmm.
Works with a lot of great industry leaders and like cool businesses that are doing stuff in space and peeing on strips and telling you what you're deficient with and, you know,
things like that.
Yeah. Something like that. I don't know the science. I don't claim to, but he'll be on the podcast soon, I think.
Yeah, we're going to try to get through him.
So, but Eric is just a cool connector dude that just has a good agency, and he holds an amazing event called Speakeasy that may or may not be happening every year. Because
every 18 months, as she says.
Oh, yeah. Reluctantly, but it's it's a lot of work. But it's I told him it's like the best event that I think we've been to, just in terms of the quality of just people and everything.
Yeah, that's really how we got to know Eric, because he puts on this event. And because of this event, we've gotten to know so many people. I would actually venture to say that like his event, the first time we went to Speakeasy, was the turning point for this podcast.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? Because we went to Speakeasy, and at Speakeasy, we met Phil Town, we met Tucker Max, you know, we met Billie Jean Shaw, we met like the list just goes on and on of all of these people that we got to know as at that Speakeasy that came onto our podcast. And because those people are on our podcast, we then had the credibility to go after names that were at sort of an equal or higher caliber. Right? So like I would give a lot of credit to that event, to like being a big catalyst for the success of this podcast.
So obviously big thanks to Eric. We've already told him thanks, but I'll thank him officially right here without him hearing until he listens to the episode. Thanks to
Costanza. Or reads the notes.
Yeah, you might, if it makes the notes, but get the notes. but Brad Costanzo.
Oh, yeah.
Big shout out to him, man. Business partner. And he's the one that got us in the door there and opened up that whole network. All of this is to say is Power Masterminds. We talked about that with Eric.
Yep,
Well, in a lot of what we're currently doing, Eric's just doing it in a different form. And it's just being cool. Matt calls it consulting for karma, you know, and I think you even told like Roland Frazier that one time. He's like, I like that.
Yeah, and I think Roland adopted it.
So, I mean, like it works. It literally, sometimes it sucks when you can't just like go for the sale or the pitch or whatever, but just be cool. And when you're cool, even cooler stuff comes back to you.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what's happened to Eric. It's what happened to us.
And in this episode, we also talk quite a bit about company culture and building a good team. A lot of businesses really struggle. He's built an agency. What did he say? 32, 36?
Nope, 30-ish.
In the 30s of amount of employees. He says an exact number on the episode. I'm just drawing a blank on it. But so he built a pretty good size business. And so I wanted to sort of dig in into how do you find the right people? When do you decide to bring in a new person? So we talk a little bit about team building, and then once you have that team, how do you build a culture so that people never want to leave your company? And we dive pretty deep on that sort of cultural element of building a great company culture.
It's having a masseuse in there is the key.
Yeah. And also he started a company that was Facebook before Facebook.
That's right. And his brother was actually one of the founders of MySpace.
Yeah.
So that's interesting side notes all around. They're very social.
Yeah.
Those Bermans. So Eric's awesome. And he has an official bio here, but
he tells his story better than
exactly
than we will do if I read his bio right now.
So thank you for submitting your bio, Eric. We're not going to read it.
Yeah. but also thank you for telling us your bio in the episode when we get into it.
Just messing. All right. So those notes, we mentioned the notes. We always mention the notes because you know why? Why, Matt?
You got to get the damn notes.
Well, it's because we always have, you know, we got peeps on there taking notes.
Yeah.
We got notes every single time.
Yeah, so. But we also mention the notes because we want them to get the damn notes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So get the damn notes.
Yeah.
So you can get those damn notes for free.
Yes.
At
You can either text the word comp, C-O-M-P, to 38470. If all you got around you is your phone right now, that's probably the easier way to do it. If you're at a computer or you just prefer like extra steps, you can go to hustleandflowchart.com/comp and opt in there. We'll send you the notes that way too. So those are your two options.
So the notes are really cool. Sorry.
Haven't repeated it three times yet.
Got it. Psychology.
So you got to text the word comp to 38470. That's comp to 38470. That's comp to 38470.
Wow.
Or
who's got it brought in the freaking parrot?
Or you can go to hustleandflowchart.com/comp.
Broken record.
That one only gets said one time.
Yeah, it's not as important.
Yeah.
But it's still cool to go to.
Yeah.
We don't discriminate where you go get the notes. Either, but be quick.
Either way, you end up with the notes and we end up with your email address.
Oh, man. But it's not a gotcha because you're going to get some really cool stuff. So yes. Go get them. All right. Be quick and thank you. And I thought I was going to say something else, but I drew a blank. So
let's go talk to Eric and let him say something else.
Let's do that.
All right.
Eric, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Yeah, you're very welcome. And you're a fellow San Diegan, so you're just technically not too far down the street from us. A little East Canada. Right.
Yeah. I guess if you're here over, 30 some odd years, and I hate to date myself at the top of the show, I guess that makes me a native in San Diego, right?
Yeah. I would give you that card. We're from here, but we're in our 30s, so I guess that's it's about the same.
I've lived here for 36 years. I'm also 36 years old, so.
Got me beat. Where are you from originally?
From LA, Calabasas. Now home of the Kardashians, but it wasn't as famous when I was there.
Formerly known as the home of the Bermans.
Yeah. Actually, I did go to high school with the Menendez brothers. For those,
oh really?
Oh, wow. Damn.
Great
seemed
crew.
Like a normal kid at the time when I had him in math next to me, but hey.
You don't want to tout that around too much back then. No. Jeez. Well, what brought you to San Diego originally?
UCSD college out here.
Okay, yeah. And you stuck. Good.
Yeah. I loved it. It was great.
Awesome, man. Well, yeah. Well, let's you run an awesome agency it's near downtown San Diego, I guess. It's pretty much downtown. And you run, I would say, the best networking or just mastermind event, one-day event that we've ever attended. Mm-hmm. Probably event in general, just the caliber of people you bring together and just the format is kind of that. I feel like that's how you can gain the most out of an event. And it's called Speakeasy, which is really cool. I don't know if this, I might not be allowed.
Is it supposed to be a secret?
I was just thinking.
Speakeasy event. You still can't get in with a password, so I get.
That's right. Yeah, man, it blows us away. I love how you guys put that on and the exclusiveness of it too. Like you said, password. Looks like you have to knock on a door and say the code word. But let's get into the backstory, man. Like, how did you get into Branditize, your agency? And I guess this marketing game as a whole. And
even before that, you mentioned before we hit record that you helped start a company that was kind of like Facebook before Facebook ever existed. So I'm kind of curious about that story because that probably predates the story of what you're doing now.
Yeah, it does. Actually, it's a good segue into how I got to what we're doing now. And then I can actually come back later and talk about strategy behind networking and masterminding for really a lot of your listeners out there. It's such a so passionate about how people can all really learn, and it's just right at the tip of their fingers for doing some basic things. But so we'll come back to that. But after UCSD, back to that, back to then, people graduate, a lot of people run off and get those first jobs. I was a big econ major, did well there, and I guess I didn't really rush to a job, and I wanted to sit back and look around. And what really attracted me is a buddy or a guy that I met through a friend said, hey, we're doing this thing in the college market. And, college market's such a coveted market by advertisers, and we got some tech in there. And if we could capture the eyeballs of the college students, it's worth all that. And I'm just like eyes are glazing over, but just really what attracted me is enthusiasm of actually sitting in a room and like, cool, so let's go build something. I'm like, okay, where do I sit? He's like, what? I'm like, let's get started. So it was like three of us. And, I guess in hindsight, that's when I learned I was an entrepreneur. Like I didn't realize that until you look back on your life and your career. And you hustle through college, focused on getting that high GPA. And I joke now that I've never actually used a resume once in my career.
Correct.
I'm like, I worked hard to get that, high a GPA, UCSD, that's useless now. So we started this company back in 93, dating myself again. And we started, imagine the world of the internet and the browser being actually a telephone.
Right.
And what we had built is this tool for students where you would actually using communication to connect them. So think of organizations. If you wanted to communicate to your entire, let's say you're in fraternity, mm-hmm. back in the day, it was like pick up the phone. You know, we're talking pre-cell phones here. You got to call everybody up. Hey, we're changing the meeting this time. And how do you get the word out back there? So back then it was all like, press one for organizations. You hit one. Press one for fraternities, two for sororities. Boom, press one. Press one for Sigma, Alpha, Epsilon. Press two for whatever. So you click your group and they say, press one to send a group broadcast. And so we'd send, so we were actually having mail being sent through the phone through group mail, group mail in that fashion. And then it was like, okay, then press two for the weather report, press three for the surf report, press four for movies. So your browser was through the phone. And then we built up this, built up a team and it was 10, 15 people, 20 people. And then this guy named Mark Andreessen came around with this thing called Netscape and other sort of, the internet sort of, nearly buzz came out. We're like, oh boy, time to pivot. There's this internet coming fast. All the stuff we're doing on the phone, we now got a mirror and do on the computer as well and start doing that. So that's the early, early days of aggregating college eyeballs on the web into one central place was birthed by our company called College Club at the time. And we kept growing and growing, started acquiring companies. The money, which was so hard for us to raise for the first few years, again, entrepreneurial lesson back in the day, I worked over a year, about 18 months without a salary after school. Ooh, but yes. Just to get the experience and get in the door and learn and, get my MBA on the fly, just hustled to make it happen. So it'll go back to the company. So all of a sudden money was being thrown at companies left and right. We started growing pretty quickly. And next thing you know, we were the 40th largest site on the internet, the number one site for pure college students.
Wow.
And it was just like, we couldn't, people couldn't stop throwing money at some point. So I think we went to 400 employees, raised about $80 million, finally filed our docs to go public. And we were supposed to swallow up all the competitors, go out at about $500 million. And I could have been retired in my late 20s. took our first vacation, applied to Karma, never forget it. Big rainy day. We're watching the TVs on that Thursday in April when all of a sudden the markets just totally tanked. The first big internet crash. Mm-hmm. CFO flies out that night, like doesn't even stay like more than a few hours, flies home. We have that following Tuesday, a $10 million bridge to an IPO. So, the big companies bridge you because we're burning like $2 million at that time. This is the day where venture capitalists and money was like spend. Get up balls, get market share. We don't care you're losing money. We'll fund you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're just following the orders. We ended up not having enough money to, instantly money dries up. They don't give us the $10 million that we were expecting. And now we're like, oh shit, what do we do now?
Right.
So immediately going from 400 down to like laying off 200 people, going through a miserable, miserable time where you're looking around thinking like nothing can go wrong. And as an entrepreneur, again, these are life lessons. Like when you think that, what can go wrong and you're untouchable, there's always something. Like you can't even think that. We never even thought that would happen.
Yeah.
Inconceivable to think we made it, all this hard work, 7 years of grinding, we finally got there and just all came crashing down. So it was very, very, difficult time for a lot of founders that were in there just building this thing out. And then another lesson of building a company at that point was understanding board control and how important it is to keep the number of seats that you control. We didn't control the board, and ultimately the board then at that point their sort of MO is to get rid of the company and cash out as much as they can
on assets and all that.
Just get rid of it not knowing how long it's going to take for the market to get back. Mm-hmm. So we went from going to require all the competitors to us getting acquired through a 363 bankruptcy cleanse,
right,
where the assets got bought out, all the founders got let go by the board. And, here we are trying to, start over again, sitting in there scratching and saying, wow, you learn so much in 7 years. It's like an MBA could have, I got through experience. So I wouldn't trade it for anything. And I like to tell people that it's one thing when you lose money that you had in the bank. It's another thing. We didn't really never had money in your life. And it's just a bunch of paper. So, it's not like it wasn't as tough of a blow.
Yeah.
And you're young and, young and energetic still at that time. So
yeah, you're still 20 something, entrepreneurs in general are always optimists, it seems like. So it's like, even if you're getting knocked down a peg, you're just like, there's another way. I'll just go around this way and that way. Yeah. How did your mindset change with business after that point? Even though money wasn't flowing in, it was paper, but you were obviously beat around and slapped sideways.
Absolutely. I think when you take a step back and after you get through the emotional frustration you go through and get through all that, you take a step back and say, all they could do is focus on what's ahead. You can learn from all the things we went through and ensure that doesn't happen again. But then you get to say, all right, well, what can I do but move forward? And what I have is still the lessons, and I'm way ahead of anybody, you know, many other people at my age in my life. Hmm. Cool, let's go at it again. And I get to do this the way I want to do it. I don't have to necessarily follow the rules that the company had. And there's some things in culture that I want, that I like, that, you know, I could take, or things I didn't like that I don't have to take, or when I build new teams. And so it was kind of, you know, it's kind of nice to know that you have that confidence really going into you know, the next part of your life.
Yeah, that's good. That's awesome. So what was after that? What did you do?
So was consulting, and you know, this is still early internet days. So anybody that had internet stuff, you know, I was kind of a guy they'd call and get help with. I was also more like the COO at that company. So understanding systems and operations was one of my strengths. Just so happened that when we were running that company, we were young and trying to learn about life. One of the things that the founder that brought me to the company, he was a big fan of two guys, Tony Robbins and Brian Tracy. Mm-hmm. And we used to lock ourselves in the room at 6 a.m, go 6 or 7 every morning, listen to a Brian Tracy or Tony Robbins audio program, a cassette back in the day, or VHS. Right. Yeah. I fell in love with both those guys. And you know, I'm going on the side again, people talk about what your give back in life. And my whole thing is that, you know, if I, you know, in my rocking chair in the future and I'm retired and have lots of money to give back, it would be fixing the educational system to introduce more life skills. Ooh. You know, the stuff that they don't teach you. You know, why are they teaching you, you know, trigonometry when, imagine they taught goal setting and how to communicate, how to actually, you know, balance your checkbook and
manage money. Yeah.
Yeah. Manage money. Like, yeah. Instead, we'll just throw you credit cards in college and get you in debt so we can, you know, yep, screw you over. So there's, you know, so there's a lot of those stuff that we learned from Brian Tracy. Fast forward, family friend worked for Brian Tracy at the time. And she knew of me as the internet guy. And this is 2001 and Brian needed a website. And so, you know, I'm like, D. Brian Tracy's in San Diego. Oh my gosh. I went to visit him and I was like starstruck. And, you know, shaking, oh, Brian, you know, can I get your autograph? So I came in and said, Brian, you know, I know what you need. Here's your business. I totally get it. Here's what I would do. I'm going to do all these things for you, but don't pay me until I make you money. I may need some help paying a couple guys out, but I'm not going to earn a dollar until you earn money, because you're my kind of guy. So one of my sort of personal lessons and things that, again, I try to share with others is if you have the opportunity, the ability to take a part of what you do and work for free or equity or prove yourself first because I was confident in my ability, that gets your foot in the door in any situation. I hear a lot of people complaining about, well, I'll just never get ahead. I'm working for these wages, you know. And I'm like, you know what? There's a lot of hours in the day. So when you get home at 5 o'clock, why don't you do 3 hours of work for a company that you really get inspired about and hustle and get out there.
Love it.
And, yeah, you know, just trade your time for equity and experience. Mm-hmm. And you get to really put that on your resume. You know, another example, I reflect back to a difficult conversation I had with my parents, my mom, particularly when I didn't make a salary for the first, you know, year and a half. And she's like crying to me one day. I'm like, what's wrong? She's like, I literally helped you get your education through CSD. And I just worry about you. You're not making any money. What's going on? I'm scared. I'm like, Mom, you don't understand. I go, the education that I'm getting right now, I can go walk into any job and make double whatever I was getting offered when I first started college. I go, I'm perfectly fine. I'm better than fine. And it was like, yeah, understanding that it's the experience that people look for in different jobs. That's what matters.
Sure. Oh, I love it. There's no better education than just being in the trenches. And then it's, like you said, working for equity, but also even if you're just working for referrals and expanding your network, like, right, just the opportunities that can come from that are just immense. We've done that.
We did a lot of portfolio building. And back in the early days, I was building websites. Joe was making videos for people. And we were doing it for free just so we had something to show other people. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. That's right. You got to do that. So going back to your question. So I started with Brian.
Yeah.
And then consulted for a few other companies. I remember I had a fun venture with Club Med. That was a cool one. I got to go out there a few times and build my Club Med for them. Yeah. Kind of fast forward many years of consulting from there, and I was 2001 when I started with Brian, and then kind of fast forward to 2012, 2013, had a little team out there that was running his online business. And a lot of people kept coming to me and saying, hey, what you do for Brian, can you do for me? And I was kind of really not looking down that lane. I was kind of more excited about building something cool and big. Mm-hmm. And you know, after College Club. And then I realized that you hear that enough times, I'm like, well, wait a second here. Maybe this is the lane I need to go down. Maybe I need to, you know, there's a market here for this. So I took the two sort of most senior people on my team, my tech guy and my marketing person, and the three of us agreed to say, hey, why don't we partner up and build out an agency to go out and do what we do for Brian for others. And so thus Branditize conceptually was born. Had to have the conversation with Brian to figure out how we sort of want to flip the relationship on its head. where now the whole team was essentially became Brandatize employees versus Brian Tracy employees. And we got to work on other clients and no longer have a monogamous relationship. So, you know, that was a fun conversation, and Brian and I have such a good relationship. It all worked out well. And he's still one of our best partners and clients today. And then the journey was born into Brandatize.
That's awesome, man. And yeah, I saw that he was still a client, or is still a client, and he's on your website. I'm like, how cool is that? Mm-hmm. So he was the inception of this whole path here. And then I'm sure that just built, you know, everything else just kind of leapfrogs from there, branches out.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Right on.
Does Brian live in San Diego, Brian Tracy?
Yeah, Solana Beach.
I did not know that. That's cool.
There's a lot of speaker gurus actually in San Diego. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. We have a mutual friend. His girlfriend was dating, one of the heads of Brian's company, actually. Brad's.
Oh.
Brad, yeah. random connection, yeah. But we have some tight connections to him too. But so Brandatize, I mean, that's just a full-blown agency, just to kind of lay it out here, it sounds like, right? So not just websites, but you have what the marketing behind the sites, and I'm sure there's a lot more that I don't even know about.
Yeah. I mean, we say Brandatize is really the grouping of brand build and monetize. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of look at three phases of any digital marketing, you know, business. It's we look at and say, all right, well, how's the brand? You know, brand meaning, you know, what's the messaging, the logo, the look and feel? Do you understand your competitors, your avatar? Is that sort of in order? If it is, then I suggest, okay, we go to the next phase, which is build. What do your assets look like? Your website, your social media properties, your email funnels. Mm-hmm. What happens when your avatar, who's now seen your perfect message, goes to your site? Are you communicating to her correctly? Are they doing what you want them to do? And then monetization, which is what everybody wants to immediately skip one and two and go right to third phase, is I just need sales and grow my business. And oftentimes we understand we need to do that right away for our clients to show them, you know, that we can deliver. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'll always go back to them and say, look, we could get you leads immediately. That's not a hard part, but they're going to go into a leaky bucket if we can't fix first two phases. So ideally we can work in conjunction with all three. Fortunately, we do get some clients that understand that order and have the ability to invest in that and say, okay, yeah, let's get the branding right, the build, and then we'll go into monetization, which is the, you know, the perfect way to go. But again, it doesn't always happen that way. Mm-hmm. So we like to, you know, brand build, monetize, and then ultimately, you know, full service. I love having, you know, I have about 35 people working under one roof. For me, it was really important to build a culture and a team, and have everybody working collaboratively. I know right now people like having these virtual teams and staffs, because the thought of actually paying rent and going into office every day when everybody's so used to convenience and you know, no hassle. I understand that, but when we're trying to build the team and be working with so many clients and communicating so often, it really makes a difference having everybody work together. So I knew building a culture and learning what I knew from my other company would be critical. And then, when we get back to that, and then of course our services, just, you know, full service, we, you know, understand the customer journey from start to finish and help with all aspects of the online business, from building the sites to funnels to driving traffic through videos, content marketing, paid media, blogs, you know, social media marketing, everything.
Yeah.
So cool. Now, so with this, the new company, it was all pretty much self-funded. You didn't raise any capital to build it or anything. So when it came to building this team, what was the first hire, and you know, what's sort of your approach to team building? Because I do think a lot of small businesses are just getting started out. That's probably one of their biggest struggles, is, you know, finding the right people and finding the capital and feeling comfortable bringing on the additional payroll. So what was your first hire? And then also, what's kind of your approach to hiring?
Yeah. So a couple of things there. Well, first we were fortunate in that when we did sort of spin this off the agency, we knew our numbers from Brian Tracy and we had some profits baked into there. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it was just saying, okay, and we were all, you know, me and my two partners were getting compensated from that. So we had cash to start. It was just, and we had a little bit, you know, making some profits and saying, okay, let's reinvest our profits back in to the business and slowly grow based on what's happening with the clients.
Right.
So we were able to grow off of that and really being conservative on the cash flow. Back to, you know, what I'd said earlier, if I didn't have the case, then it's back to saying, look, I'm the owner of this company. I got to forfeit my salary for a little while to build it. If I see an opportunity to grow based on new client, I got to do what it takes to get that person in there. I think one thing, you know, people tend to do too much is, you know, as a CEO and owners, is everybody talks about getting out of the way, meaning try not to do everything as the CEO. As soon as you can get out of the weeds on stuff, the better. So I was really big on saying, okay, I constantly have to replace myself on what I'm doing and find something better than me at that area. I'm always going to be busy. I'm always going to be working 12 hours a day. That's just, no matter what. But if I could be working on the business and trying to, you know, or jump around and fix whatever needs to be fixed, that's better off than me being in the weeds doing, let's say, marketing stuff.
Right.
But let me find somebody who likes doing that marketing stuff and executing better than I, and then build off that. So that was a lot of the strategies, always looking to replace myself and then just building systems in each area. And oftentimes I would start a department, build a system and say, okay, you're now going to take this part over.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, do any of the staff that you have now, do they hire and bring in people underneath them, or do you still handle most of the hiring just to replace the stuff that you do?
As far as hiring, you know, who does the hiring? I think right now it's really the department heads do the hiring. However, I'm still in the interview process.
Gotcha. Okay.
So we agree. We all agree. You know, the man. You know, management. I should say ownership agrees constantly on the position. We're always looking ahead at capacity and what we need, where we need help and resources, and then. You know, we'll agree on the positions, and then the department head usually, that does the it does the interviewing, and we jump in. I usually jump on probably interview three.
Okay.
Third final interview.
Nice. Yeah, and I know you mentioned it earlier, and I've seen it, and you know, it's like even on your website, and you even showed us around on video last time we chatted, but culture is massive in at Branditize. You know, all under one roof, talking the same language, it sounds like. You're having a fun time, too.
Yeah.
Explain, like, your... I guess your beliefs behind like why culture is such a key piece of your company and maybe how others can try to introduce that into their own companies, even if it's a lot smaller, maybe even a virtual company can do a little bit.
Absolutely. I think culture is probably more important now than ever before, especially with the quote millennial generation or the Gen Z generation, and really understanding what, you know, people want out there. You know, I'd like to say that when you're going to an office every day and you're working there 8-9 hours a day, you're spending more time at your office than you are at your house, you know, as far as awake. And so, you know, how do you make this a home and environment that people generally like to go to? They're very, you know, they're happy to go to and they're excited. So really then it boils down to is what motivates the employee, what gets them excited, and understanding that and working around that. And, you know, some of the key things, of course, is people want to feel like they're making an impact out there. The work they're doing really has value. You know, if you just give them, have them being, you know, an order, you know, push, you know, you push papers their way and move things around, they're just order takers and not really getting creative or thinking, that'll frustrate the person. Or if they feel like what they're doing really doesn't make a difference out there. Right now, one of the biggest things when you interview people is they want to learn. They all want to grow and learn. So how do you set up environments to allow that, facilitate that, happen, bake that in your culture? You know, for us, we say, look, you know, part of your hours or your capacities, we're baking in 2 hours of learning per month at minimum. You know, you can learn on your own. You know, and we're going to send you to events and give you opportunities to grow. You know, we do things like, you know, we have something called Fun Friday, which is a big thing here, where once a month we stop, we do like a lunch, group lunch together. We brainstorm as a company, a couple fun topics, and then we go off site and do something fun. You know, maybe we'll go to an escape room, or maybe we'll just go do happy hour, or we do like a yacht party or something. Yeah. And the idea is, and people say, well, you know, you're just wasting hours. I'm like, no, that's actually work, because if I'm getting the guy who's the tech guy who doesn't really interact with the social media person together, and they're having fun and drinking a beer and hanging out, they genuinely like each other. So when conflict comes up and communication needs arise, there's actually a good solid relationship there. Plus they're like, wow, this company really takes care of me. You know, things like unlimited PTO, or people, you know, people, if they need to take off, if I, hey, I got to, you know, I'm getting married, or my best friend's getting married and I got a chance to go to Italy for 3 weeks. Cool. You know, that's a cool opportunity. Don't sweat it. You know, we trust you. And that's another thing that this generation wants. They want to feel like they're trusted and they're valued, and we have their backs. So doing things like that, and of course, obviously, the snacks and the dogs in the office and
the massage room. Come on, you have that. You showed us the massage. Yeah. Masseuse comes in weekly.
Yeah, so we have it monthly. So
monthly. All right.
I always call that the fun. You know, getting a lot of value for a little money out of a perk. You know, brag perk, right?
So
you do the math and say. And if your employees go tell their friends that, yeah, my company actually has a masseuse coming once a month, you're like, whoa, you got to be kidding me. So 20-minute massage, you actually do the math on that and say, all right, well, if you're paying 30-some-odd employees, you know, X number of hours, you know, et cetera, to get that, you're looking at maybe $500-$600.
That's not bad at all, yeah.
For that opportunity to get a good brag and a good thing over there. Yeah. It's not just for the brag. It's obviously, it has its benefits, you know, really relieving stress for people, making them feel valued and important and all that. We want to take care of them.
Yeah.
So those are some things we do. But I think for anybody listening, it's really taking a step back. Not everybody works like us. Not everybody has that mentality of we do as entrepreneurs, and stepping back and really asking your team, you know, what's important to you? What do you want to see? Let's build this together. I have a culture committee now. They've actually kicked me out. So now they're all about it.
Really? Wow.
let's meet a couple, you know, and I'm like, oh, these all sound like great ideas, but they're all now into it. What can we do to make the company fun? We do a offsite retreat once a year. I take them away for 2.5 days and overnight for 2 days to sleep over at a giant house.
Uh-huh.
Wow. And let's all hang out and have drinking games together. And
beer pong all around.
Yeah, it just adds to the wow. It's, you know, it's great. So
I feel like you're like a smart, you're not obviously not a startup, but it feels like that startup kind of feel, but not like over the top where it's just freaking ping pong all day long and nothing gets done, you know, but you're creating a solid foundation. It sounds like, because like you said, when the tough times happen, inevitably a client is losing their shit on something or, you know, something just goes wrong and, you know, you could just easily point fingers, but it's not that easy when you have a great relationship with everyone you're working with.
Yeah,
I think that's probably one of the best things you could possibly do for a team. Did you have that from day one, or did that start at a certain threshold with your company?
I learned that. That was one of the things I took away from my first experience is culture and the importance of it. So I got to take the things I like, and you know what was important from day one and talking to my two partners was like, look, we got to build a good culture. You know, we'd have at it at certain things we agreed to or didn't agree to. And I was always pushing the envelope on that. Like, okay, I'm going to set a budget. I mean, you know, I'm willing to spend X a month on culture and activities. And, you know, and it's funny over time, they sort of, you know, they all came around and say, okay, we get it when, when, you know, employees are all talking about why they're here and all, you know, the kind of reviews we get. So,
I also love too, that you created an environment where essentially people's best friends are at the office, right? Like if you're going and drinking with them and doing happy hour and doing, you know, frat parties with them and whatnot, it's like their buddies are the people that they go to the office every day to see. So it kind of creates that looking forward to going to the office because I get to see all my best friends every day.
That's right. Yeah. Little things, celebrating birthdays, giving people, you know, shout outs and just all that kind of stuff. We have our holiday party and everybody gets to bring a plus one significant other. So try to do two events a year to include the significant others. And that's also just important. Why would you do that? Well, you think about it. People go home every night talking about their business.
Yep.
And you want the significant other to feel not threatened by the business. I always feel like, cause you're literally taking that person away from their loved one at home when they're thinking of talking about work. I almost say like, I don't want to be the mistress to the relationship at home.
Oh, I like that.
Think about it. Yeah. So if you include the partner into what we're doing, they're like, okay, I now get why you always talk about work. And I see that environment. So just always thinking of little things like that is also key.
That's good. Yeah. Because we have a virtual team other than us that don't live that far from each other. But you know, our ops manager, Shannon, lives in Colorado and Denver. So, but we talk to her every day through Slack, but once a week we have a team call with her and it's an hour long. Yeah, it's more like 2 hours now, but like half of that is kind of, I'm not going to call it BS. I used to, but it's just catching up. It's talking about movies. It's talking about whatever, just having a great time. And at first we were like, oh man, we just wasted, quotes, 45 minutes on talking about football or how stupid the Chargers are for going to LA or some dumb thing like that. But we're like, you know what? This is our culture. This is actually us putting meaning behind what we do and just having a good time and not taking everything so damn seriously because it's life.
You care about her though. I mean, you're asking questions and actively listening, which means she knows, oh yeah, my boss cares about me.
Yeah.
I mean, we know all about her husband. We know about her dogs. We know about what she does on the weekend. Yeah. Like we know, like we're friends. We're all like really good friends that also happen to support each other in making income for each other.
Hey, I mean, what better life is that when you get the buy-in from the significant other and haven't actually thought about it in that sense, but you don't want to be that mistress that drains them as a person because that energy will get spread everywhere. And that's the last thing anyone wants.
One day I'll get the buy-in from Joe's wife.
Yeah,
one day.
Not going to happen.
One day.
I'm just kidding. One day.
Keep working in that. Buy her more gold. No, I don't know. Diamonds. How about like the network you've attracted? That's what's interesting. You brought it up before, and that's I think probably the biggest thing Matt and I see when we go to I guess we'll curb speakeasy for 1 second, but just your clientele is they're just interesting people. They're interesting companies, but they're doing interesting things, and it seems like you hook up with the right people, not a lot of people. Could be a little bit wrong with the quantity, but
I think you said you had like what 12 clients total or something like that. It's not a huge amount, but you put a lot of focus on a few core clients, right?
Yeah, 14, and we go deep because of the whole, you know, we've become like an extension of their team. And that's part of our model is making sure, you know, we're not just going to do a one-off project for, you know, hey, just do some work. We're your team and we're going to go all in. And you know, to your point, you know, we look to make a positive impact out there in the world by the clients we choose. We want to elevate their brands to greatness. And so we're looking for really good solid clients out there that are doing good things and are just good people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how have you, and you know, this is helping the listeners a little bit, but your mentality of attracting folks or disqualifying folks, how do you present yourself and your offers in a way that just attracts the best clients that you want to work with for the long term and actually give them great results where they're happy too?
Yeah, I think honestly, I think a lot of it also started with, you know, who we started our company with, a guy like Brian Tracy and then Jack Canfield from Chicken Soup for the Soul. And you know, we did want to not get stuck just in the author speaker lane. So now obviously we've gone above and beyond that and have really cool health clients and a space client and other stuff. But I think it started with having a good core of clients where people look at it and say, wow, these people are all making a difference in the world. And then just part of our process of who we're taking on and interviewing is we do look at it like a partnership, and we don't want to take on clowns as clients. We've rejected clients that just don't fit the checklist we have. You know, we call it the pain in the ass factor is one of the things we look at. Are these guys going to, you know, really just suck to work with? Are they going to be a drain on my team? Is everybody miserable? Mm-hmm. If that's the case, that is a negative energy. It just drains everybody. Nobody wants to work on it.
Yep.
And so, and that goes back to culture too. As they get to work on projects, they really feel like they're making a difference in the world by the stuff they're working on.
Yeah.
So we disqualify people that don't fit that mold.
Yeah. So it almost sounds like, and you probably guys have like a core set of beliefs, this foundation that's like these are the hell yes people. These are the hell no's. We don't want to do this. Do you have some kind of, I'm sure it's just baked into the culture at this point, but was that an intentional thing? Like hell yeses, no's.
Yeah, it's one of our core values, you know, believe in the products that we believe in. It's gotta be stuff that we were passionate about, the stuff that they're doing. And again, our mission being, you know, we make a positive impact by elevating authentic brands to their full potential. And so that's our mission is, you know, we want to make a positive impact. That's front and center of our mission statement. So if they're not impact brands doing cool stuff, you know, there's a lot of people that I know and heard of that are selling, you know, muscle pills and lotions and potions and you know, driving around in a really cool car for a while until that, you know, falls away, and they're doing things that are really, you know, kind of black hat shady out there. And you know, I just can't live with myself on that kind of stuff. That's not for me. Great if somebody wants to do that, more power to them. But that wouldn't work on our environment, for example.
Yeah, makes sense. And that probably trickles over into now Speakeasy. What you've been doing it 4 years, 5 years?
We've done four events over the course of probably 7 years.
That's right. Yeah, the mastermind as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that started from the value and understanding the value of masterminding, which again is something I really push people towards. I know you guys are big fans of it as well, and I respect you guys for that. You understand how cool it is to do that. It's funny. I don't know if it's a West Coast thing or not, but like I've met people on the East Coast who are like, what? You guys really? Do that? You guys share ideas?
Collaboration? What?
I think it just, you know, I'm, you know, maybe it's my own insecurities of knowing that I'm definitely not the smartest guy in the room when it comes to a lot of the marketing stuff, you know, maybe stronger on the ops side. So I'm like, well, I know a lot of people. Why don't we all get together and just share ideas and what's working for us, what's not working. And so, you know, I've joined some organizations like EO, and that's been very helpful. And then I said, you know what, I'm getting some value to these companies, but I'm not really getting in the weeds value from people I have deep relationship with in my specific field. So I just went out there and started recruiting people in the digital marketing world and other entrepreneurial world. And that was many years ago. We do this monthly dinner, and you know, I've got the art form down to, you know, doing, you know, networking, you know, dinner, your own dinner groups, and you know, some secrets that I'll share. You know, it's just, if you're ever going to organize a group, which I highly recommend, you know, finding people in your industry that you want to learn from, bringing them together, doing a monthly meetup or whatever, in our case dinners, is, you know, the biggest thing that makes it work is $100 fines if you miss dinner.
That's right. I've heard about this.
So it's just like, you know, we're all busy, you know, we're all extremely busy. If you can't commit to that, great, put it in the pot, and you're gonna end up paying for the dinner if you don't go to. And it gets people to stick around. I mean, these are all guys that get paid a lot of money for their time, and it's a mutual respect thing. So, you know, that turned into, well, gosh, we all know a lot of really cool people out there, and there's others that can't make this dinner group once a month, or at least want to get in, but we're kind of full. What if we all reached out to our networks and just bring everybody we all know into a room together and focus on relationships? And so that was kind of how that idea was, you know, put together. We've all been to tons of conferences where you walk around and you end up talking to three or four people that you've met before. And that's about it. And you maybe learned a couple of things in the morning while your brain was fresh, and by the afternoon, you're already off to the bar or something else. You're done.
Typical.
And you forgot to follow up, forgot what's going on. So, my focus is, you know, how do we turn this on its head? And what matters is the relationship you build, because that really is what transforms your business more than, you know, one tactic is cool. I'm not putting and taking away from learning stuff. That's great. If you learn the tactic and actually get a chance to implement amongst all the other, you know, millions of ideas on your plate, But getting to know somebody like us getting to know each other, you know, you guys, you know, that's already been, you know, it's transformational. It got me fired up about podcasts and it got me thinking about it. And now we get to know each other. Now you guys have relationships that, that you can introduce me to and vice versa. And I can introduce you guys to people like we've already started doing. That's the kind of stuff that matters, you know, for me. And so, so I think that's important for, you know, anybody listening is it's not hard. I talk to like, I'll, like for example, I talk to buddies that I know that own restaurants. I'm like, why don't you mastermind with other restaurant owners? Like, what? That seems competitive. I'm like, I go, customers are going to go out and eat and dine. It's not like they're never going to, you know.
They want a variety anyway. Come on.
They want a variety anyway. I hate to tell you, but they're going to go to your all your places together.
That's right.
You know, your ideas and sit around and, you know, what's working for you. You know, you guys are all going to complain about, you know, maybe something with hiring or some, you know, or the you know, the maybe it's the mayor's office in San Diego. You guys could band together. I mean, there's so much stuff you could do about the power of the, you know, working together.
Yeah, it is interesting because I guess we just grew up, and I'm sure you did too, is like in the collaboration field. It's kind of all we've known.
Yeah.
At least, you know, in terms of being an entrepreneur, where it is a little weird and foreign when you hear these other companies and you're like, wait, what? You're actually thinking of competitors. Like, wow. Like, we'll even refer to other podcast people if like they're just not a good fit for like production or whatever. It's like, yeah, just go to this guy. We trust him. He's great. And it's like, yeah, and technically competitors, but like, let's just support each other. It's cool.
Yeah.
Well, the other sort of smart thing too is like, I've even done a mastermind with other digital agencies in town. Now the side benefit for that is now the poaching situation gets resolved.
Right. That's
so
true.
Now we all got each other's backs. So like, okay, guys, no poaching rule. If anybody kind of tries to cross over, we'll let each other know. And by the way, my employees kind of know that on network too. So
that's good.
Hey guys, I go, there's a very good likelihood that I know if you guys are interviewing at any other agency in town. So
like I got my ears out there. They're everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. Now you sort of alluded to like a process for doing these dinners. Can you talk about that? Like some of the elements of doing one of these mastermind dinners?
Yeah. I mean, for us, I mean, right now our whole system is like, we found a time, like for us, it's the fourth Tuesday of every month, 7 o'clock, rotating dinners, different parts of San Diego. We have about 13, 14 people in the group. You guys need to be in it, by the way. We got to get
you in. I know.
Thank
you, man.
And then we just pick a location, send out a time, usually try to find a private dining room. And then at the meeting, we were doing $50 late fines too. And that's kind of been, I haven't really enforced that as much as I should be, but the $100 no-show fine definitely has been enforced. And then what we typically do, we have had a couple style meetings. One is just a quick update in sort of shares, like what's a big share and what's a big ask. So we go to our room, everybody gets like 5 to 7 minutes, depending on how much time we have. You know, first was like a half hour, just kind of catching up. And we just go around the horn. Everybody listens up and says, hey, here's a cool hack that I learned. I just did this, it's been great. And here's a need I have. Does anybody know or anybody help me on this? And then we're all helping each other. And plus, of course, there's the, you know, the email group that you do, you know, after the event. We're always out there reaching out, looking after each other.
Yeah.
It's a good opportunity for that.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, that's just and it's so simple to just create something like that. We're a part of a whole bunch of different masterminds. A lot of them are informal, some we pay for. And
yeah,
I mean, they all have their equal form of value, you know, and you know, you could get connections out of this stuff. Yeah. And just the people there just sharing, you know, war stories. It doesn't even mean like you need to get something right there in the group. That's where probably the biggest benefits happen for us. Yeah. I mean, in a forum, our podcast has been our mastermind as well. You know, it's all the connections and doesn't matter where you're at. Like,
yeah, you guys are set up great for that, just to what you're doing, which has been fantastic.
Yeah. No, it's really cool. And then now what you stepped it up into the actual annual event, being Speakeasy. And what, you have about 100-ish people in there or so?
Yeah. Well, I like to say, and it might be like 18 months or so, but periodic. I hate to commit to this, but we had, I think about 75 to 80 at the last one.
Okay.
And it's not for lack of wanting to do it, just a lot of work for,
I know,
you know, so, but, you know, it's tough wrangling entrepreneurs together, so about 75, 80 people, and we'll continue to do them periodically and share and bring everybody together. And the cool thing is it's like, you know, you get a new crop, about half the people, like you guys are gone. You guys probably come again and bring others next time. And
That was our second one, actually, this most recent one.
A couple times. And it's changed drastically in the type of folks that were there. And I think that's the best thing is you guys do a really good job at filtering and kind of qualifying the right people. And I think everyone has to be invited by someone who's been there before, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And then we just asked it like, hey, is somebody out there doing really big things or having done some really things that would impress others? And, you know, could put their ego aside and share. And, you know, some of these people in the room are, you know, big players and some are up and coming players, and everybody's there to help each other out.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, it's been a benefit of, you know, a lot of those folks we met at the first year have been on our show. You know, like Phil Town has been on here, Tucker Max, and a whole bunch I can't think of right now.
Roland, but, I think we couldn't originally. No, Roland wasn't actually at last year's, so we connected with Roland differently.
Yeah, it was, but he was there this year. I know that. Yeah. That's awesome.
All great guys. I actually had them. Tucker, I never met him until the actual speakeasy. Yeah. Cool. So now, you know, now we've, you know, continued a relationship, which is cool.
Now, do you plan on growing that and making it bigger, or do you like it that size? You plan on kind of keeping it around that many people each time?
I don't know. What do you guys think? I kind of like it not more than, you know, I think if we go too big, it loses its luster a little bit for one day.
Personally, I think it's about right. I mean, if you had a few more than you did, it wouldn't probably even be noticeable, but I think it's pretty close to about the right amount.
Keeping it in that same room, like basically maxing that room out, is probably the bet. And I think it looked pretty maxed out.
Yeah. So, I mean, the feeling you get is almost walking out of there. At least I hope this is one of the feelings. It's like, wow, I had a chance to either interact in some way or fashion with almost everybody in that room, or I plan on following up with the people I came with. And, you know, if you go much longer, it's going to be hard to, but yeah, that's at least you feel like it's attainable to some degree.
And you actually get a book with everybody's sort of bio and their contact details, so you could follow up with anybody. And, you know, Joe and I at the last one actually got to meet someone who is sort of kind of one of our sort of heroes for a little while in Cam Cameron, because we grew up in San Diego. We were born and raised in San Diego. He was one of the coaches for the Chargers for a long time. And when we saw Cam Cameron's name on the list, we're like, that Cam Cameron? Is there more than one? Because the guy from the Chargers couldn't be going to this event. You know, so we were actually really blown away to get the opportunity to meet and chat with him for a little bit. And now we're planning on having him on the podcast too. So
that's great.
Held his Super Bowl ring.
Let me take a picture. Yeah, I got a picture of the Super Bowl ring. Do you guys get one of those?
I didn't get the picture, but I basically held it and I was like, wait, am I supposed to touch this thing? I'm like, this thing's freaking heavy, man.
It's and for anybody listening, definitely it was not a Chargers Super Bowl ring.
Baltimore. But people like that, like it's amazing who you can bring. And the beauty behind, I guess, any mastermind doesn't mean that you have to be all agencies or podcasters or whatever. I mean, like he was a football coach for most of his life. Now he's doing real estate, but he's giving and learning from everyone in the room.
Yeah.
And he's the right kind of guy. That's like when I met him, I'm like, this guy is out there hustling, building a really, like he's a retired coach and he's eager to learn and he wants to give. I'm like, this is a guy that would be great. He came in there, he's taking notes. He's like, God, this is like, he doesn't get access to stuff like this normally. So it's like, we did him a huge favor in that aspect.
Oh yeah.
It's amazing. Like, you guys and others, and you got opportunities out of that.
So I mean, just in that room, we talked to somebody who is essentially reinventing the rocket launch process by, you know, essentially dragging rockets up into the air first before launching them. We met somebody who's like reinventing the sort of biohacking space with little at-home test strips where you can find out what sort of food allergies you have and things like that. And I mean, just the caliber of people we met and the types of things that they're working on were just like, I mean, we probably never thought we'd be in a room with people that are working on those types of projects.
It's a unique thing. It's unique. And I think for a while we might have taken it for granted a little bit, just masterminds and being connected to a bunch of folks, because when you start to branch out of our space, I guess I don't know what our space is really, but I guess marketing, entrepreneurship, a lot of folks just don't chat together and talk about, and you can now collaborate, like you said, with someone who's doing stuff in space, sending satellites up there, and you're like, wait, hold on. But there's a way that we can all benefit from each other. And, you know, I think they want to be on the podcast too, and they want to have one of their own. I'm like, there you go. That's cool.
let's get Jason on the podcast.
Book him up. What's his company name again?
Phoenix Space with an F. F-E-N-I-X.
Phoenix. Yeah. That's and then right. the guys from Bloom. Bloom
Health. Health is now called Vessel Health. In fact, that's what we're doing. My next meeting here is they're doing their beta test groups all come to the office right now to get their first test strips.
Oh, rad. Really?
Yeah. He said that he'd send me some strips, and I need to follow up with him about that because I really want to test it. I think that technology is going to be really big.
All right, well, we're done with this call. Run over here and you can be a beta tester.
Yeah. Holler. Well, how, I guess for you, so with all of this in the mix, I mean, you're just planted right center in the middle of all this stuff, and being the connector, you know, bringing people together is probably the most valuable position. Where do you see yourself, or how do you make the most of this? And I mean, there's a lot that's happening, but what are some of the key, most important takeaways for you being in that position, and where do you see you going with that in the future as well?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's funny because I've sort of, it usually comes after the speakeasy where I'm thinking, damn, there's something that I've done here how can I take this and do a, you know, a cool business opportunity for me? And I haven't quite figured that part out. I mean, where I'm able to leverage that, of course, is through my business now and, you know, getting referrals for my company, you know, by having a network and looking to serve and help others out by connecting them. I mean, I always look to say, if I can help other people out for, you know, I'm not worried about it. I'm getting the word out there about how I was the connector. Things will come back. If I ever have a need, if I ever have an ask, you know, people are, you know, happy to help out. And like I said, it's great for, you know, referrals and leads and all that, you know, for what
we're doing. Yeah. And that's pretty much what we've always seen too. It's, what you started calling it, consulting for karma.
Yeah. Consulting for karma. Yeah. We do a lot of that.
Yeah. I mean, that's how we got connected with Roland Frazier really close. And, you know, that's developing into bigger things. And same with all sorts of folks that have been on our show. It's like, hey, just give good out there to the world and things will come. Yeah. It might not be immediate, but just trust.
It may not even come from the person that you gave the advice to. It could come in different ways, but
that's usually what does happen. You're absolutely right. Yeah, exactly.
No, yeah, man.
You guys are dead on. I love it. I love what you're saying. That's it.
Wow. Dude, a podcast is in your world. Branditized podcast. you got the people right there.
Yeah, that's true. And I know who to go to get some coaching on that.
There you go.
Exactly.
We'll help you out. Consulting for karma right there. That's awesome, man. Well, where do you see, is Branditized anything in the future there? Or, you know, as agency as a whole, do you see that model changing or branches of that?
Well, it's always evolving. Just, I mean, in the model of how you do an agency, and we've actually been really working the last few years to find the right, you know, sweet spot. But people always talk about what's the future of Branditized, and you see some agencies, you know, get acquired or rolled up into a bigger agencies and all that. And you know, fortunately, the partners and I are kind of aligned in that. We're not really that interested in saying, hey, let's go, you know, hustle up and try to, you know, squeeze out profits to get sold. And the reason why is I look at that and say, okay, great, you get an exit. And you know, you get some money off the table. Now you're sitting around, and you know, I'm not going to go retire in my 40s, late 40s. I'm not going to retire. But you know, what am I going to do? Well, first thing is I'd probably come up with a new idea, of course. And I already have like 10 ideas brewing, as always. Like
always. Yeah.
But you know, what's the first thing you need when you have a good idea? What do you need to build? You got to build a team.
It's a team, yeah. Right? You got that.
So I'm like, shit. Well, I just sat here and spent years building the best culture and team that I'm proud of. And I got to start over and do that again? Hell no. So like we kind of joke around and say, well, I think our goal would be to build enough cash reserves to say, hey, why don't we take 10-15% and build our own little sort of mini incubator, be our own incubator in a sense. Mm. You know, we have the staff, we have the marketing, we have all the things we need, tech, the marketing to blow up any idea that's out there. You know, so let's try to get a model where we could quickly test out an MVP, you know, minimum viable product, if an idea we have. And then blow it up with our own internal resources and become essentially our own clients. Mm. Use the agency to build up an idea. And that way we get to keep both. And then we get opportunities to get, you know, our staff involved in the upside of some new projects that can potentially blow up. So that's kind of where we're thinking today. Now, that doesn't mean that it, you know, makes sense. And I know there's always the focus issue of stuff, but, you know, I believe we could probably pull that off.
Yeah. So you've got basically the team to essentially be a client of your own company.
That's
for
right.
Any sort of future projects. Mm-hmm. Now, I imagine with all the people that you get to know and the speakeasy and all that kind of stuff, you also get opportunities to invest in some of these groundbreaking companies, and you have this opportunity to see some of these companies like Bloom and like Phoenix and some of these companies and potentially invest in them. How big of a part of your business is investments and, you know, finding some of these companies to put your money into, because you see some of this, you know, unicorn moonshot potential with some of them.
Yeah. Well, you know, thanks for the good question. So, I mean, in some cases it's really been either, you know, Eric Berman personally or my company personally or Branditized investing. And the way Branditized has done it is we've done, you know, hybrid equity cash deals where we've come in with a few accounts and said, okay, well, you know, let's work off of what we call a base break even rate. Well, we're not making a dime. You're sort of paying for my team. And then we'll sort of you know, also earn some equity along the way and do that for a period of time until you're at a better position. Now, there's a couple of things for us. One, that gets us equity in a cool company that we like. And two, is assuming things work out and as they get more funding, you know, we already have a foot in the door of a company that we love and we have really, you know, we'd be really motivated to see them grow. You know, and you know, a company like Phoenix Space, that's one example. A company like Vessel Bloom Health, we started there, but now their strategy is to build their own internal team, and I think that's actually the right move for the kind of company they're doing, whereas like Phoenix Space doesn't need to necessarily do that. In each case, we own equity in both, which has been exciting, and in other instances, I do see a lot of deal flow just because, like, you know, being connected out there I think one of my weaknesses is probably everything looks good to me. So I'm always like, yeah, this is a great idea. So, you know, I probably, you know, spent and done some not the smartest investments, but I think in time it'll all pay off. And I'm trying to get a little smarter and wiser about what I'm putting money into as an angel investor out there.
And that was going to be one of my questions, because just us having this podcast, we talked to so many awesome people. And because of that, there's always more introductions and more extensions of the conversation, and then opportunities come, partnerships, clients, whatever, you know. And I was going to, you know, we've had to hone in our focus of what do we actually want, and what can we just have to say no to, or refer, or say later.
Yeah.
What kind of filters, or how have you, I guess, worked on yourself and maybe your team as well to really hone in your filters and do more than saying no? Because I'm kind of like you. Matt's a little better at this than I am, but like
I default to no, and then and then figure out if it's a good idea later. Joe defaults to yes, then goes, how do I do this now?
Exactly. So what's your approach around all that?
You talking about more investing or working with clients?
More the filters of opportunities. I would say probably more the investing side, where it takes you away from your core focus to like branditize focus.
I think I look at it, and first, you know, one of the things I'm trying to do is, do I understand the space and the business? And even though even the space investment, I didn't understand space. but I got familiar with it pretty quickly by people that I know in the industry, and asked a lot of questions. And now I'm trying to find other smart people that I say are smarter people than I when it comes to the different industries that can help me sort of vet these deals. And, you know, so I find friends, hey, do you mind looking at this? And if they get excited too, it really helps give me the confidence. So that's one thing I've learned. I'm trying to do more of versus just saying yes to everything.
Yeah.
And I think the other second thing I've tried to do a little bit more of from learning is, I get so probably like you again, I get so emotionally hyped up when I hear it, and you get excited and fired up. I'm like, let's go. And then I'm like, okay, so now I've like had this policy mentally to say, okay, I got to let it sit for like a couple of days.
That's smart.
You know, I'm still excited about it. Like, then you start to think of all the things that you didn't ask the first time around when you started the deal. Yep. What about this? What about that? And then I think, like any other company, it's management, management, management. Like, who really is the person at the end of the day? What's their track record? You know, people talk a lot and get excited about stuff, but what have they really done before out there, and the ability to execute? I think that's one of the most important things for anything out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be the longevity of that whole thing anyway. So yeah, that's the horse you're trying to ride with.
That's right.
With our business, that's definitely one of the things that we struggle with. With having the podcast, is just a never ending flow of really amazing people. So yeah, figuring out how to filter it is really a tough thing. And
I think that helps a lot, because that helps a lot of folks just in general with shiny object syndrome. And, you know, what direction should I take, or what model of business? I mean, a lot of folks that will reach out to us, those are similar types of questions.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the internet as a whole, it's so simple to just go down rabbit holes. So I think I like the 2-day wait. Derek Sivers.
I think I told you guys last time, I created a Facebook group called Dumb Money Getting Smarter.
Yeah.
So, because I consider my money dumb money sometimes. So, you know, anybody out there wants to join that and help me out and look at these deals, you know, please.
No, but I got some investments for you.
Yeah. Awesome.
He's in.
For my son.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's an evolution, man. I think that's the name of the game. So, just keep building ourselves up and learning day by day.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
And dumb money getting smarter. I like that.
Well, we know you got another meeting you got to jump off to here. Do you have any book recommendations that you read or refer back to often, or recommend to other people often? They could be about the stuff we talked about, or just, you know, a book that you really enjoy sort of referencing
Right now, I just go to right now I'm actually listening to a lot of podcasts on, agency owner podcasts. Mm-hmm. So focusing on that. So I don't know how much that would be.
Oh, that's super helpful. What are some of the podcasts you're tuning into?
It's a guy named Jason Swank, agency, and you know, he's a guy who sold his agency, and he's got a really good brings a lot of guys on his podcast that are agency owners. Uh-huh. So that's kind of a lot what I'm listening to right now. I don't get a chance to read as much as I'd like to, so I typically get excerpts, or some of my team around me will show me some good stuff, and I'll read a lot of that. One of the other things I'm looking at is we're doing a lot of reading into Gino Wickman's Traction. Mm-hmm. And we've been a lot of studying on OKRs. We went with an OKR system over the last year, which is a way to manage the business through objectives and key results, which is, there's really three big systems for managing the workflow right now that we're hearing a lot of. It's either like OKR systems, which is, started by John Doerr at Kleiner Perkins that Google uses. There's the traction, and there's the scaling up that Vernon Harnish did, and they're sort of
EOS.
So those are the three that I've heard a lot of. So doing a lot of studying in those areas as an ops and CEO from that perspective.
Cool.
And then there's obviously different marketing blogs and stuff. But I mean, I try to get bits and pieces of those. You know, I wish my commute sometimes was a little bit longer. I hate to complain that I only have to commute to work because then I can't really get to, I want a long drive every once in a while to listen to more podcasts.
Yeah. You got to take like a couple laps around the block and act like, oh, I couldn't find a spot. I'm just going to keep going around here.
I just go walk my dog. I work out of this home office. I'm at my house right now. So the only time I get to listen to podcasts is when I go and like exercise. So I go on long walks and tune into podcasts then. But
there you go.
What you just explained is the exact reason why we have our Evergreen Profits newsletter is every single podcast, we have all of the notes taken on it and people can essentially buy Cliff's notes for these episodes save them time.
Yeah.
You're smart. I love it.
Well, I know you have an EOS consultant that was at Speakeasy, so I'm sure you knew that, though. You chat with him if you want some answers.
We did, yeah. We actually met with him afterwards.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, he's a cool guy. He reached out to us, too, because we've been toying with the traction thing. We're not totally to a point where I feel like it's totally necessary, but either way, even if just implementing some of those things from the book, you know, traction, the other one, there's another one. Rocket Fuel's one of them. There's like three of them. But either way...
Yeah. We could talk after the podcast and share, and I'll share what I learned and all that.
Awesome, man. Well, cool. All right, Eric. Where should folks go check your stuff out? You got Branditize, Speakeasy, and
really just Branditize would be the easiest. Brand and then ETIZE.com, brandetize.com. And then I think we're gonna be launching a free audit page. So Branditize.com/audit should be launching in the next very soon. So we're gonna, help kind of do an audit for people that wanna explore a little bit. So yeah.
Nice. We'll link it all in the show notes like always. Go check it out. Go check out Eric's company. It's just check out his clients too. It's just cool people and it just gives you a kind of insight of what's possible out there and deal making, even if you're agency or whoever, you can do some cool stuff with cool people. So
yeah. Well, cool. Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, guys. And we'll catch up more soon.
All right, Eric. Appreciate it, man. Take care.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Hey, 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 thank you for listening to that episode. This is Joe Fear. I'm sure you probably already knew that. And Matt is not here right now, but I'm pretty sure he enjoyed the episode just as much as you and I did because, he went into the production of kind of making that thing right along with me. So thank you very much. And I want to give a quick shout out to our buddies over at Easy Webinar. These guys have been supporting us for a long time. And Casey Zeman is just a super good guy all around. He's actually been on the show before. He's the founder of Easy Webinar. So if you look up Casey Zeman on any podcast platform you're listening to, go check him out. Go check out his backstory, what he's all about. You can learn a lot about webinars as well. And right now, Easy Webinar, these guys are actually hooking you up with a great trial. It's a completely free trial to test out their software, soup to nuts, check it all out and see if it's a good fit for you. If you go to easywebinar.com/hustle, that's HUSTLE, if you didn't know how to spell hustle, there you go. So if you go to easywebinar.com/hustle, you can go grab a free trial. And Easy Webinar literally lives up to its name. It's super simple. Super easy. And it does all the stuff that you're looking for in any kind of thing with webinars. They literally cover every single type of webinar you possibly can do. So from live to automated to scheduled at specific times and all these crazy features in between. Can't even list them all out. I'll be here way too long. They give you a ton of advanced analytics, what's working, what's not during your webinar based off all these actions. You'll see who attended, how long they stayed, if they clicked the offer or if they didn't. Basically, you're going to make more money and you're going to work less with this thing and you're going to create better relationships with the folks that are listening because it's a good experience. You want to give that good experience along with some great content, of course, and a killer offer if that's what you got for them. So go try it out yourself. Go check out easywebinar.com/hustle. That's easywebinar.com/hustle. All righty. So that is the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, enjoying it. Hopefully you did. I'm pretty sure you did if you lasted this long. And go check out Easy Webinar when you get the chance. And we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Hustle and Flowchart podcast. Before taking the time to listen, we want to give you something a little bit special. every single episode that we do, we actually have somebody on our team take notes. We basically have a Cliff's Notes version of every episode where you can go and find all of the tips and tactics that they laid out, all of the resources that they laid out, all the good stuff from this episode. We actually have a nice simple notes version that you can find on our website. So go to evergreenprofits.com, find this episode that you just listened to, and give us your email address and we'll send you the notes. Thanks for listening.
Go get it.
Wiki.